Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Peyton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Of course, we could not pull it off without our fearless producer, Miss Katie Galley. This is going to be a fantastic segment, Lee. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast CEO with Evident, Mr. David Thomas. How are you, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me today.
Well, David, can you talk a little bit about Evident? What are you doing for folks?
Yeah, sure. We're in the cybersecurity space. And in particular, we help companies and individuals securely share personal information. So all of these problems that you're hearing about with the loss of personal information, the theft of personal information, we're working to solve those problems for businesses and individuals.
Now, can we talk a little bit about, in general, about cybersecurity, about the maybe the threats that are obvious and the threats that aren't so obvious? Like, what are some of the low-hanging fruit that individuals would have to deal with when it comes to cybersecurity?
Yeah, sure. You know, it's such a broad space. It's hard to narrow it down to a few areas. But, you know, when you as an individual, when you think about, you know, the things that you can do just to have the basic protections in place, you know, the first thing, and it's a simple one, is you should just be cautious of what types of emails you open. Certainly what types of attachments you open to emails. That's, you know, a simple one. It doesn't require a tool. It doesn't require technology. Just be cautious. Know the source of emails and pay particular attention. There also are, of course, you know, tools from antivirus tools, anti-malware tools that you can put onto your computer and your mobile devices that make a lot of sense. You don't want to be without those basic technologies. And then, you know, since your personal information is, you know, one of the most vulnerable things about you, it's actually really important to protect that and to pay attention to how it's being used on the internet. And so you want to do things like, you know, watch, you know, how your credit is being accessed. You want to pay attention to, you know, who's accessing it, when, what access they have. And you can do that by locking, you know, your file, can, you know, ensure that people aren't able to access it when you
What does locking your file mean?
Yeah, it's when you work with the credit agencies to disallow access to your credit information until you unlock it.
So now that means to reach out to, there's three major credit bureaus, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then you go to each one of them and say, if somebody hits this, and that's usually some credit card authorization or something like that.
Actually, no, it'd be more like opening a credit card.
Opening an actual credit card.
That's right, or
like
opening
a bank account or like buying real estate or something.
That's right, some significant transaction.
So you can just freeze this? Like I can call or, and I guess I can't call for my wife, I can call for me, right? And say, validate that on me and say, look, just lock this thing down. And then when I get ready to go buy a car, I call them and say, okay, I'm going to go car shopping or.
Yeah, that's exactly how it's meant to work. I will tell you, it's not quite as easy as you know, just making it sound. You know, you don't make a simple telephone call to the credit agencies. You usually have to go through their website. You may have to buy a product. You know, it's rather, you know, complicated and cumbersome, but it's worth the time and the effort.
But then somebody can't just willy-nilly go and do that.
That is correct.
Right. And that's what's happening. That's what identity theft is, right?
Yes, most certainly. One of the richest targets after your identity has been stolen is to sign up for a new account to obtain credit in your name. And so if you can prevent that, that prevents one of the most significant vulnerabilities that individuals face.
Now, I had a situation happen just this past weekend where I got a call from my credit card that said, we think there's fraud on your credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fraud, though, was something that I wouldn't have thought that you could tell it was fraud. Like, they bought iTunes cards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, less than $100. Like, $20, like $15, then like $3 or $4, $20. And then my credit card company said, hey, did you do this? And I'm like, no, I didn't. And then they canceled the account and it went away. But like, how do they know that that was fraud?
Yeah, it's amazing. The credit card companies, methods have gotten very, very sophisticated. And I also think they've gotten more interactive, which is, you know, really helpful. You know, of course, as a user of credit cards, I like it when they give me a quick
alert. Right, exactly. It doesn't bother me at all.
Right. And I can confirm whether or not it is fraud instantly.
Well, first, this was the thing. When I got the thing, then I'm like, is this fraud? Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, I didn't, you know, now, look, I've done enough of these shows with cybersecurity. I don't believe anybody. So, the first thing I did was like, Then I went to my credit card and called the number on the credit card. I didn't call, you know, I didn't click on anything. I called them and I asked.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And then they said that it was fraud.
Incredibly smart. That's absolutely the right thing to do. And it's especially true of email. You know, if you go back to kind of the first point, being careful what emails you open. You know, a lot of times fraudsters will send you something that appears as though it is from the bank.
Right.
You know, in order to entice you into clicking on a link or calling a number in the email, it's much, much more effective to pick up the phone and call the number that's on the back of your card, or to, you know, interface through some other secure means, an app that the credit card company has published is also incredibly secure.
All right. So that's at the individual level. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that you could scare the heck out of us all afternoon about stuff like that. But from the business standpoint, what are some things that we need to be looking out for? Obviously, email is one of those. Can business credit get stolen, or is it what are the big potential losses that can happen for a business when they don't take care of the cybersecurity stuff?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's really an infinite list of you know, vulnerabilities, threats, and exposures that businesses face. It's not as much related to the theft of a business identity or the use of a business identity, although there are some, you know, cases like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more related to the theft of employee information, the theft of customer information, certainly the theft of intellectual property. You know, there's state actors, of course, that are after, you know, intellectual property. And so, you know, from a business perspective, you have this really wide, you know, range of things that you need to protect. But it often does center around something that an attacker can steal that is of value. And oftentimes, the thing that they're most easily able to monetize is personal information.
Is personal information. Okay, because I'm sure, so I don't know where it is, but I bet somewhere that all three of our social security numbers are at somewhere in a Business Radio X file somewhere.
I hope not.
No, I bet they are. I bet you, we have Katie's social security number somewhere.
And I hope not.
I bet we do.
If you pay her, you probably do.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
It's complicated to avoid holding personal information, holding system information if you're a business. And really, that's what Evident is all about. We help businesses avoid having to hold and process and handle sensitive information while still giving them the opportunity to operate their business as they normally would. Now, that's a huge scope, by the way. There are any number of applications in a business where you may have to use personal information. And so the first place that we've started is really with consumer information and making sure that as businesses verify the identities, as businesses check the credentials of the people that they're working with, or that the people that somehow participate in their business, that they can do that without having to be exposed to personal information that then gets amassed in some database and becomes a target for attackers. And use case by use case, we're helping companies solve this problem. And one day we might get to Katie's use case too, by the way.
But part of the solution, I think I'm hearing you say, is we could get things set up where we're not actually even holding it.
That's right.
You guys are holding it, or you've worked out some secret, double secret probation way of holding it that we don't have to worry about.
Yeah, that's right. We use cryptography actually to distribute the information so that it never has to be held centrally anywhere. And that's vital, because the thing about these attackers is they want to go after 100,000 records, 100 million records, because when they can steal that much information, they can monetize it. One theft allows them to monetize millions of records potentially. In our case, they would have to break into millions of places to get millions of records. Uh-huh. And that's a very big deal. It changes the economics for the attacker. And so that's what we're after, is making it more costly for them to perform the attack so that it just doesn't work out to be a profitable endeavor.
So now, when you say, you know, the bad guys are going to monetize it, but I guess they sell it on the dark web or however that works. Can you talk about how that works? So, like, say somebody does break in, what is the dark web, and where they're in a pile somewhere and they just put an auction site and they just say highest bid wins? Is like, how does that part of the equation work?
Yeah, I guess maybe let me start with the dark web, or the deep and dark web, you know, however you want to refer to it. I think there's a lot of mystery surrounding that concept, mostly because of the name, honestly. These are really, you know, websites that are not publicized, that you can't find on Google, that don't you know, typically even have a name, like a DNS name. You know, they don't have, you know, companyx.com, you know, attached to it. You simply know the address of the site, and you're able to go to these marketplaces where, you know, enough people know about it. They know that they can find personal information that they can purchase. And yes, it is sold to the highest bidder, and the richer the record, the more detailed the record, the more money that they can get for it. And there are various, you know, other nuances, of course, you know, being able to access a record no one else has ever accessed, right, fetches a higher price than, you know, simply.
So are they being sold in like blocks of 10,000 names or 1,000 names, or you can buy two names? Like, how does it work?
It's very flexible. Yeah. You can buy one, you can buy 2,000.
So like I can buy a name and I could say $20. Like, what's a name?
But you like, might be in a block that... You think you're safe. You may already be in a block that just they haven't put up for sale yet or hasn't been bid on, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I think the biggest challenge, you know, for everybody right now is there have been so many massive breaches that your personal information, you just have to assume that it's already out there and you have to protect yourself as if it's already out there. So, you know, I hopefully as more and more gets digitized, one of the biggest challenges that we have is that it could become more readily accessible on the internet, easier to steal. Right. You know, if you're digitizing health records, that's great from an efficiency point of view and accuracy point of view, but it does present theft, you know, the risk of theft. And so really, while a lot of basic information is out there today, one of the things we're very focused on is as those records get richer and richer, how do you put the proper protections in place so that you don't have to assume that all of your private information is simply out there and available to the highest bidder?
Now, I guess it's tricky from the business standpoint because the consumer is insisting on speed and speed and speed, and they want these kind of interactions and transactions that happen, you know, instantly. And at the same time, the business has to put safeguards in place to protect the information. So you're constantly kind of squeezing both ends of the balloon at the same time.
That's absolutely right. You know, they don't just demand a fast experience. They demand a customized experience.
And like instant.
Absolutely. Right. It's got to be instant. It's got to be customized, personalized to me. And that requires data. And this is the biggest fundamental problem that you've got. Businesses need data in order to operate. It's an enormous asset to them, but it's also a tremendous liability. And so that duality is really what we're dealing with. And we're trying to help businesses get the answers that they need without necessarily being exposed to that private information that, you know, is such a rich target for attackers.
So now you guys figured out a way to enable that to happen for your customers?
Mm-hmm. We do.
And then, so how did this come about?
Oh, wow. You know, I've been in cybersecurity for about 20 years now, and I've been
Before it was cool.
Way before it was cool. Actually, right about the time that businesses were first getting on the internet and realizing, oh, wow, we need to protect ourselves. You know, they didn't even know, hey, that somebody might try to deface my website, right? Somebody might try to attack my information. And so, yeah, since essentially the beginning of businesses getting on the internet, at least in a meaningful way. And so I've seen a few generations of this, and I'll tell you one of the keys of how this came about was, you know, we as, you know, professionals in the cybersecurity community, we've got to start addressing root causes of insecurity. You know, there's a lot that goes on in the cybersecurity space where there's a vulnerability, and so we have to put out a fix. There's a vulnerability, we have to build a product. And that type of approach is important. You can't ignore that type of approach, but you also can't ignore and neglect solving some of these more fundamental issues. And one of the most fundamental issues is the proliferation of sensitive personal data and the target that creates for attackers. And so when we, you know, realize, hey, this is one of the root causes, you know, to insecurity on the internet, we said, look, we've got to go and address that root cause and start to give companies a way to fix it. To get in a position where they don't have to choose between operating their business and being secure, they've got both options. And so, yeah, that's where the idea for the company came from. It's ambitious, you know. By the way, we're not trying to do something small here. You can't do it all in one bite. You have to help, you know, customers and with each use case in a prioritized way. But every use case that we address, every customer that we work with, we're lowering, you know, tremendously the exposure that they face from having previously been involved with all of this personal information.
And but this isn't something you knock out a Wednesday afternoon or 1 month next year. You go in there and you triage, I guess. But then you've got to be diligent. It's an ongoing process to stay on top of this. Yes.
Yeah, all cybersecurity is. Cybersecurity is
keeps evolving, right?
It's a cat and mouse game, right? As soon as you add a layer of protection, you've got attackers that are trying to figure out ways to get around that protection.
Yeah, and these attackers, I know the mental image that I get when you talk about is like the teenager in the hoodie, but it's my understanding that these folks are getting pretty organized and they're not all just kids in hoodies, right? I mean, we got some pretty sophisticated organizations working at this, don't we?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when you're talking about making six and seven figures, the people involved are much more professional about how they go about it. And then, if you want to go to the farthest extreme, state actors, of course, one of the most kind of treacherous of attackers out there. They have ample resources, ample time, and motivations that go well beyond profit. And so, yeah, there's everything from the teenager in a hoodie all the way, to an organized group of individuals that are thinking nothing about how they pull off, one particular hack and organizing tools around it.
Now, your service, is it for the individual? Like, is it for me or is it for companies like Business Radio X? Like, who is your customer?
Yeah, we sell to businesses and businesses in turn use our service to help protect consumers. They use it to meet data protection regulations. They use it to get access to those business answers that they need, accurate and timely information, again, without having to see that source-sensitive information.
So, like, is the business, like, the data-rich businesses, like healthcare businesses or, like, e-commerce businesses, like, things that deal with a lot of personal information? Or is it kind of, like, just general, regular business, or all of them, I guess?
Well, we have a lot of use cases, but the ones that we're focused on are places where the internet is operating as kind of the marketplace to introduce supply to demand. And that can happen in any number of markets, basically. But it's the reason we've drilled into that particular use case is because you've typically got a modern company that is using the internet to introduce thousands upon thousands of people to thousands of other people. And they need to know something about each other without really having to know everything about each other, without having to know all of the private details about one another. That's a vital use case. So that's really where we spend most of our time. But we have use cases ranging from marketing companies all the way through to very traditional businesses that have a need for accessing data, but the concern over being exposed to it. And so it's a wide range of use cases. A small company, though, we really have to focus in and we have to hammer our use case that we have found is most beneficial to customers, and we'll grow. That earns us the permission slip to grow from there.
Now, do you typically have to sell it into the CIO or the chief technology officer, or is this something that goes right to the business owner because there was something bad happened and now they're reacting to it?
Yeah, we certainly interact with business owners, operational owners on a regular basis, but generally these marketplace companies have a function called trust and safety that is focused on, ensuring everyone who participates in the community has all of the credentials that they should have, has been properly vetted. So we'll often deal with trust and safety organizations, with legal compliance organizations. They're usually fairly young companies, and so they don't have, the structure that your typical, Fortune 500 does.
So you're dealing with somebody that is dealing with the information.
Absolutely.
So yes. That they're the ones who recognize where there's kind of a peril might be there.
That's right. They're the ones who know what they need for their business.
Right. And they know they can't do it.
To avoid, exactly. Right. They don't know they know they can't do it, and they also want to avoid the risk. Right. Yes.
So it's not a brand new idea in a lot of these conversations, but then it's a matter of, are you the right outfit to help them stay on top of it?
We try to stay focused, on use cases where we can bring information and answers to bear that really no other company could bring to bear. And so that's we spend our time there more than we do in more generic use cases where we may have to deal with an entrenched, competitor. And that's our, that's our approach to these accounts. It's where we think we can add the most value and help the most. And so it's where we focus first.
Now, when you had the idea and then you kind of started deploying this out there, can you walk us through what that first engagement looked like and how you were able to serve them?
Yeah, sure. So actually, our first engagement was with a rather small company that has grown quite a bit since we started doing business with them. And in their case, they were using the internet to attract babysitters. And which is obviously childcare is an incredibly sensitive application. Right. And so, when you're finding someone for, that's going to go and keep a child, you have to know that they are who they say they are.
Right, so you had to vet them.
Absolutely. You have to know that they have the right credentials, that they have the appropriate background, right? And then you have to know, and this is a continuing problem, you have to know that they, continue to be the person that they claim to be originally, right? Because a lot of times what happens in internet marketplaces, once someone's signed up and approved,
they're in the club and then no one knows
What happens after that? Well, they may hand their phone off to another person.
Oh, and then
have the other person go and do the work on their behalf, right? It's really, when you're dealing with a sensitive application, you have to know that you continue to deal with
right, because if you don't have trust, then their whole business goes away.
That's exactly right. Absolutely core to their mission. And so, we help them verify the identity of the person, the background of the person, the credentials that person has. They would badge the individual and say, mm-hmm. This person has a first aid certificate, right? This person has, this other credential that matters. We have the ability to check, an amazing number of credentials, about 1,600.
So you're actually checking. That's part of the services. You're going to go to that organization that they supposedly got certificate from, and you're checking Mary Smith. Yes, Mary Smith.
That's right. The business answer that they need is, does this person have the qualifications to participate in my platform? And we'll give them that answer without them ever having to handle or hold or see any of the sensitive information.
I really am a certified Business Radio X host.
That's what he says.
I don't know if you can find it in all your files, but I am.
Actually, that's why I'm here today. I just want you to know.
It's an intervention.
Yeah. All right. So there are these technological solutions, mm-hmm. and you guys are diligent. You're staying on top of it, and it's evolving. And there's these dirty, messy humans circling around it. So we can screw up the best technical solutions, right? By there's just little stuff we as humans can do that could just make the whole opera fall apart. Is that true?
Yeah, of course. And honestly, while it's easy to sit and say that type of thing is due to all of us individuals that should be smarter, the fact is it's really on us as a cybersecurity industry to make things easier and to make them the default. Mm-hmm. That's really what has to happen. Security has to be the default. Privacy has to be the default, right? Knowing that someone is authorized to participate has to be the default. And we as cybersecurity professionals have to make that the case.
So there's some real mindset work to be done. There's some environment, culture, language, education that has to go along for the ride in your work, mm-hmm. right?
There's no doubt, and I don't mean to minimize that work. It has to take place. You have to train people. Just like we said at the beginning, be cautious about what emails you open. People need to know things like that, and they have to pay attention. But it's really up to technology professionals and cybersecurity professionals to make our solutions easier to use and to make them the default. It's a little bit of a cop out to say, if we only had a bunch of, users that were smarter.
Smart people.
Right? Yeah, right.
We don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's not fair. And so it's really up to us as an industry to make that happen, to make
those
things.
Well, I mean, I think that's true to some extent, but I think that it's also the managing of the expectations of individuals, because a computer isn't a refrigerator. Like a refrigerator keeps things cold and you open it and everything's working. But a computer has so many moving parts and there's so many things going on there. It's hard to be that simple though, isn't it?
you know, it, yes, certainly it is. I mean, I don't mean to minimize, you know, the concept of, you know, training users and having educated users. But yeah, I mean, certainly computers are incredibly sophisticated devices, and more so, you know, we say computers as if it's only, you know, a big desktop system that we would sit in front of,
right,
you know, when we come into work or something like that. But I mean, every single one of us has a computer in their pocket today.
Right.
That's, you know, like
our phone
powerful.
Is more powerful than the computers of like the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Absolutely. And then you got to think about all the wearable devices that you have. You know, I mean, it just goes on and on, the amount
of
technology.
We were watching Star Trek the other night. My sister-in-law came into town. The Christmas crowd is starting to descend on us. And just not even thinking about it, we told Alexa to set the alarm as we watched Captain Kirk talk to the computer. And we're like, wow, we're there. And so that suggests to me that someone of your skill, if you so wanted and you went to the dark side, you could learn that I like to listen to David Allen Coe while I cook, right? Like,
absolutely.
So that's more data information.
Well, yeah. When Alexa is listening for you, in order to know that you called her, she has to be listening all the time.
That's absolutely right. And
wow, that's
then you
scary.
Have to wonder how many of my devices listen all of the
and then
time.
How many people can hack into my Alexa to hear what I'm saying all the time.
Absolutely.
That's, you know, not impossible, right?
No, it's not impossible. And I'd say I'm not picking on Alexa. It's not impossible at all with, you know, anything that is constantly listening. You know, you have to be aware that it might be able to be tapped into. And so, you know, you obviously have to be judicious in how you deploy these technologies. You're not going to put an Alexa, you know, in a room where you're constantly having, you know, incredibly sensitive IP related.
Right. Excuse me, I got to call home for a minute. Right.
So, you know, so you want to be smart about how you handle technology like that. But I think the bigger point, you know, that you're making here is that, you know, our surface area for attack is going up dramatically right now.
You're never going to run out of business. You've got job security for life.
That is absolutely correct.
Seriously, your market's just getting deeper and wider, and then you have to maybe exercise the discipline to, you mentioned earlier, I call it kind of staying in your lane. You identify that group that is going to benefit the most from the exact kind of support you can provide, but I mean, this is only the opportunity and or danger. And this is only going to grow over time, right?
It's absolutely.
Now,
correct.
what's the ratio to good guys to bad guys?
Oh, wow. That's a really tough question, because you got this middle category, too, that kind of will go either way. You know, I don't really have any good idea of that. But I can tell you, we need a lot more good guys. And for a lot of reasons, just, you know, from a tactical perspective, large companies, you know, need those experts in quantities that, you know, are greater than ever. But also, you know, when you're one of the good guys, you got to be right all of the time.
Right. They just have to be right occasionally.
And that's exactly.
Oh, that's a good and scary point. And there are good guys in the middle. Like, it makes perfect sense to me that someone out there wants to know that I listen to David Allen Coe, because he or she wants to send me 20% off on a David Allen Coe hat.
That's right.
And I want to get that. And so I want that information exchanged. It gets a little gray in there, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does. I mean, you know, consumers are gaining benefit from these technologies, and they care about those benefits. These are not, you know, things that are disposable to the consumer.
Right.
They're starting to rely on these benefits, but at the same time, they're, you know, they are willfully opening themselves up to, you know, a certain amount of exposure. I mean, I deal with this every day. I'm a cybersecurity professional. I use these modern technologies. There are some things that I can control and that I can put controls around, and there's some things I can't. And you know, I have to have faith that the service provider, you know, is putting some controls in place, which, by the way, as a cybersecurity professional, having faith is not usually something that you do.
Is there some
sort
of like a
position.
He's a trust but verify person.
Yeah,
well, is there some sort of, I don't know, good housekeeping seal or something for marketers that live by this code of ethics that, yes, we're going to capture as much information as we can and need to properly serve you, and we're going to live by this code of ethics? Or is there anything like that in development, a informational code of ethics thingy, or is it just laws and regulations?
There are some certifications that could kind of fall into that category. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think though laws and regulations play a significant role here. You know, and that's a tough thing to say. You know, because of course, you know, there are lots of laws and regulations that are very difficult and onerous. But this is in particular an area where some standards need to be set out, and you know, and you need everyone paying attention to the same set of basic rules, and that those are emerging mostly in the EU and a handful of other countries. Laws about how personal information can be used and how you can pull that information back, and how you can ask the company what information they have about you. It's something actually we're incredibly focused on at Evident. You know, we're making sure that everything we build is in line with the principles behind the most advanced privacy and data protection standards that are being
used. So that's the standard you're using, just as
it is. It's a baseline, right? It's a great baseline. We're not, you know, we have, you know, certainly we will be regulated under some of these rules, specifically the GDPR. That
what's GDPR?
It's a European regulation, an EU regulation for data protection, and it's all about data protection and privacy.
Right. And that's the most onerous right now?
It is. It goes into effect on May 25th of 2018.
So you're saying we're going to do that today here in America, even though that isn't the rule of law here?
Actually, we as a company, as Evident, have built our technology to those standards.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And it's important. It was a very high bar out there. They've put a lot of work into that regulation and where things should go. And so, you know, it was a great bar for us to use for our product. You know, technically speaking, U.S. companies, of course, don't have to meet that regulation unless they're working with European citizens or in the EU. And so, you know, it'll be up to U.S. companies, you know, exactly what they do from a privacy perspective. And I think that'll be more market driven than anything for a good while. But in the EU, you know, they will put these standards out, and, you know, large US-based companies that do business in Europe, you know, will certainly have to meet those standards, and how that affects their, you know, customers in the United States is yet to be seen.
Now, this seems to be a very difficult thing to put a lot of rules and regulations around, because the technology changes so rapidly, and then the challenges change so rapidly, because you have to adjust kind of almost in real time. Once the bad guys kind of figure something out, then you have to make different changes and you have to adapt.
That's right.
Constantly.
You have to regulate on principles, you know, at
more
at kind
so
of a
than
core
specific.
Level. Exactly. For example, if a company has an individual's data, that company should allow that individual to delete the data, right? That's a principle.
Okay, that's just
a
kind of a core principle. So that doesn't matter if they're good at some tactic to get at something or to share it or something like
that.
That's
right. They're looking for, you know, compliance with those principles. And so we'll see over the next, you know, couple of years how, you know, those regulations affect companies in the U.S. But, you know, from our perspective, we're building to that very high standard to make sure that we're in a good position.
Now, during this holiday time, are people more vulnerable, or does it matter?
Well, I think any time that
you're doing a lot of more online shopping,
more transactions,
you're just increasing your chances of somebody finding something or getting a hold of something.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There's just more activity going on. There's more of a desire to purchase things. There's you know, online. There's you know, there's just a lot more opportunity for this type of problem in the
well, I can tell you what's happened to me is my wife is now more diligent about looking at the debit card transactions. And so she catches stuff, and she goes, "Did you do this? Did you do this?" And I have to say, "Yes."
I know that conversation that very well, by the way. Yes.
So that is one outcome of all of this.
Absolutely, and it's a very smart one.
It is, but it can be painful.
Again, it's hard, especially when we put so many small transactions, you know, on our credit cards these days.
Right.
And you have to remember, you know, oh, this is where I spent, you know, $3, you know, and it's like,
because you don't know that $3 is some bad guy just testing. Their card's
that's exactly
good.
Right. That's right. No, it's a great point that they do that frequently. They'll use very small transaction values to see if the card is able to be used. And then they'll take that, you know, valid card and go for a larger transaction at some point in the future.
Now, so what's next for you guys?
Oh, wow. We have a lot going on as a small company. So we have a lot of what's next happening right now. But we're growing very rapidly. We are dealing with hundreds of companies in any given month. And so one of the biggest goals we have as a business is to make sure that we can sign customers up faster and make that process easier for them to start working
with us. The onboarding and the kind of integrating your service into their business, really, right?
That's exactly right. And we want to be able to work for really small use cases or very large use cases. And so we have to build our systems and our product to handle that very efficiently, not to mention our sales process, too. We want the right amount of interaction with the right size, customer, both, so that we make the experience easy for the customer. And we devote enough attention to the larger accounts. And so that's certainly one of our biggest priorities right now is making it easier for customers to
do business with you. Now, what is the typical path to do business? So that, can they do this all online where they don't actually interact with a human being? Or how does your sales and marketing work?
Yeah, and actually, first quarter of next year, they will be able to do this all online and without having to interact. For smaller use cases, that may be a perfect way to work with customers. And then, we have very large use cases as well, where we're working with multinationals to integate into several of their processes, and that's obviously a much more
because it can be a plug and play solution. Once they start working with you, you integrate into how they do business, and then.
Absolutely. In fact, the integration is one of the brightest, points that we have. We can get started right away, and then we can deepen integration over time. And that's been very beneficial to customers that, otherwise might have had to wait 6 months to get a slot in their development cycle to integrate our product. They can get started literally on day one, and then they can wait until that slot in their development cycle becomes available, and they can do a deeper integration.
Can they start on like a pilot program and try it out, or do you have to go all in?
Yeah, we do pilots with most of our customers today, and we're working to make those as simple as possible too, so that we can start running more pilots simultaneously. We're a relatively young business. I didn't mention that before, but we're just under 2 years old.
You've been doing it a long time, but this specific company is kind of new.
It is. We're just under two years old. We've only had product in the market for about 10 months now. And so, we've got a lot of work to do, and a phenomenal, team of people working every day to make sure that we can solve this gigantic problem.
Is it hard to find talent?
Oh,
and
wow.
Keep them.
We have a great mission, as a company. I mean, the problem we're trying to solve almost every
yeah, agreed. You most certainly do.
It's a gigantic, issue. So we have a great mission, and so when we find the right people, they get very passionate about it, right? And they're all in, and thankfully, we have a great team of people who are working day and night to make this happen. It's always tough finding the right talent though, right? Because when you especially when you're a relatively small company, when you bring somebody into the company, it's like bringing somebody into your family,
right? They have to believe in the mission and the culture. It's got to be a right fit more so than a specific skill sometimes.
I know, right? But can't just have them lick a colored piece of paper and know that. I mean, you have
it's
to
tough.
It's tough, right? And sometimes we get it wrong.
Yeah,
or at least I have.
No. We, certainly everybody.
Work on
everybody
that software.
Yeah, that's your next company.
it is tough. We've been really fortunate though, and we've got great financial backing from one of the largest VCs in Silicon Valley, and that of course helps attract the top talent into the company. And from a culture perspective, we also believe in the whole team growing together and improving together, and we put a lot of focus on the growth of individuals and helping them in their career direction, where they want to go, and they're helping the company, and we want to help them as a team.
Now, are you in Atlanta because of the large fintech presence here? Like, what was the thing of being in Atlanta if you were backed by a Silicon Valley VC?
It was the grits.
I do love grits.
We go where the grits are.
That's right.
No, actually, it's pretty straightforward. Atlanta has a great cybersecurity community, and we also have a great community when it comes to data. When it comes to personal data, you think about all the companies in Atlanta that handle personal data that work in that space. So there's an amazing nexus of talent here for us that can support our growth, for the foreseeable future.
But you could have been anywhere.
We could have, you know, I mean, obviously we have, you know, of course our co-founders, we all live here and we've done cybersecurity companies here in the Atlanta mm-hmm. area before, but yeah, no, I think Atlanta is really the perfect place though, from a talent perspective. And that's what you want is you want a really core advantage from, you know, where you locate the headquarters, and talent is the best core advantage that you can look for. And we have it right here.
Can't disagree with that. That was
amen.
Well said. Amen. All right. Where can our listeners go to learn more, to have a conversation with you or someone on your team and follow through on some of these topics?
Yeah, they can go out to www.evidentid.com and request a demo or sign up for one of our white papers. We'd love to talk to you and help you.
Well, Dave Thomas with Evident, the CEO over there, it's been an absolute delight having you in the studio this afternoon, man.
I have enjoyed it quite a bit. Thank you very much.
A little scary, but no, it's been very informative, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. We intend to.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our producer, Katie Galley. Our guest today, David Thomas, CEO of Evident, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.